Podcasts are an independent way for podcasters like me to bring a local voice to your ears. At the Spent the Rent podcast, we strive to raise awareness of topics that affect the often underrepresented. Our title sponsor, Oregon Cashflow Pro, offers free money management advice that can help you take control of your finances. At OregonCashflowPro.com, you will find videos to guide you towards your goal of financial freedom. For more info, there will be a link in the show notes. The following podcast is available on all major streaming sites, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. You can now listen to all previous episodes, donate to the podcast, and buy shirts directly from the Spent the Rent podcast at our newly designed official website, strpod.com.
You are listening to the Spent the Rent podcast, and now, here's your host, Patty Rose.
Hello, I am Patty Rose. Welcome to the Spent the Rent podcast. This is take two. We are joined by Doyle Canning. We had a little technical difficulties. We already did this stream at 3 p.m., and there was some technical difficulties. So if you're listening to this and you can hear us, please let me know and make sure it doesn't sound muddled. So hopefully this is better. Anyway, we are joined by Doyle Canning, a progressive voice, champion for choice, climate, healthcare for all, equity, and equality, and a candidate for Oregon's House District 8. Doyle Canning, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for letting me be here a second time, Patty Rose. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you for coming back, because this is a tough thing to do, and I didn't really want to talk about it, but doing a podcast, this is a challenge, because there's a lot of moving parts, and I'm a complete amateur and self-taught on all of this stuff. It is really cool when I make a mistake or something technical happens where there's a difficulty and then someone's like, let's just redo it. So here we are. We're going to do take two. And that means a lot. It shows a lot about your character that you're like, whatever. It's a Friday night and my family misses me, but whatever. Anyway, here we go. So before we talk politics, you and I were talking about how a lot of times when you do these interviews, it seems like it's a job interview. So we wanted to avoid that. We want to talk a little bit more about getting to know you. And I'm going to start with what it was that initially got you into advocacy, activism, and community organizing.
Hey, thanks so much. So what got me initially into community organizing? I was raised by my mom. She was a really strong advocate for education. She was a special educator and kind of dragged me along to school board meetings most of my childhood. And she really saw her job as working for equity and inclusion. Before that was really a term, this was the 1990s, in our public schools. And so that made me a really strong advocate for education. I went to community college and then a four-year college to be a social studies teacher. I believe strongly in the power of ideas and love working with young people. Thought I was going to be a classroom teacher, was also really active in anti-war activism on my campus at that time. This was the Iraq War time. And so I was recruited into community organizing right out of college. And I never dreamed that I could make my living making a difference in the community. But a lot of the skills I learned as an educator kind of transferred into community organizing, bringing people together, talking about ideas, and moving towards collective action to make some kind of change. And so that's what I've spent the last 20 years doing, and now training many thousands of other community organizers in methods, particularly around storytelling and how stories can bring people together and give us a shared vision of what's possible that we can move towards through political action. And that's how I got into politics. I work now as legislative director for Representative Confam of Southeast Portland. So I work in Salem. I've had a very up close and hands-on kind of experience in the legislature, and I'm ready to bring that for Eugene, representing House District 8.
What does that look like now? You say you work in Salem, but you're probably in Eugene a lot, working remote. Is that true? So you get to be home for the most part, which is cool. That's a good thing about, because you're based here, you know, you're rooted in Eugene, like your website says. So, you know, campaign moments, can you share a memorable moment from your campaign trail experience? I know you've met a lot of people in the last few years. You've ran for office a couple times, and these are big seats, too. I mean, you ran for Congress in the primary, and you know, DeFazio's seat. I mean, once that became available, you were like, I want to do this, and this is big. So who are some of the people you've met, and what are some of the experiences that you've had?
Well, I really love going out and being in the community, you know, being at events like Saturday Market or the many festivals and kind of community building moments that we have in Eugene. I think that's something really special about our community. That is one of the reasons I love Eugene and why I'm running for this seat, because, you know, Eugene has a strong spirit, whether it's like the dog parade or the marathon or, you know, the Oregon Country Fair. Like, people come together, and as a community organizer, that just like lights me up being part of that. I have been doing a lot of door knocking in my day, met a lot of interesting people, heard so many stories, particularly from people whose doors don't usually get knocked by political campaigns. And they're like, you know, what are you doing here? Like, you're asking me what I think? I mean, okay. You know, and having those conversations about like, no, what do you want to see in politics? Like, what's important to you? And I think the consistency is like someone who will show up and listen, you know, just the fact that someone is reaching out and knocking my door and asking me and listening rather than talking makes a huge difference and is kind of, you know, my style of politics.
Yeah. That's always made me, I'm fearful of knocking on doors. I've done some work. I'm a precinct committee person for the, you know, Democratic Party, and I do so little. And the one thing I'll say about the DPLC in a real positive light is that no one criticizes me for coming in and out of it, because I dedicate as much time as I have in me, and sometimes I just get tired of it. And you know, it's exhausting being on the campaign trail. So I don't like knocking on doors. But what you just said is true about, if you just let people talk, then I think that's a whole different approach. Tell them who you're with, and then let them just be like, this is what I think. And then you can kind of find a way to find a common ground. Because,
for sure,
I mean, a lot of the frustrations, even if we disagree on policy, we share the frustration. And that's where we got to start. So, because I'm trying to find ways, and we'll talk about this a lot, but I'm trying to find ways that we can actually have a strategy to reach out to people that we disagree with. You know, that needs to happen. And so,
yeah, well, that kind of storytelling approach, you know, rather than human beings, we're story-based creatures.
Yeah, yeah.
It's how we remember. Yeah. It's how we learn. It's how we dream.
Sure.
And, you know, if it's a story, you can help people understand a point of view versus like a fact sheet or like a graph or something. Not to say your story doesn't include facts and charts and things, but you have to open the conversation in a way that's relatable. And so that's what I've spent my whole career doing, is really helping progressives understand how better to do that.
Yeah.
We often have the facts on our side.
Sure.
If that was enough, we wouldn't have kind of the problems that we see today in terms of our environmental crisis or lack of healthcare coverage for all, or this unfair economy. The facts are all there. The evidence is in. It's a question of like, how do you actually shift the way we do our politics? And shifting the mindset is a big part of that.
Yeah. You said we weren't going to talk politics in the beginning. No, but, and it's so true that I don't even think that nationally, and this is a side note, I don't want to get sidetracked, but we're not even talking about healthcare. Healthcare is so important to the life quality that someone lives. I mean, if you have access to good healthcare, it can change your, I hate to put class into it, but it literally lifts you up in the mindset of being in a different class even. And so just having, like, I was talking to my dad, he's on Medicare now. It's just incredible what it can do. And you're talking to a lot of seniors. You said you met with a 90-year-old man. You told me about him one time. And so, yeah, anyway. So yeah, as far as a candidate that's a champion for universal healthcare, you've never shied away from that. That's always been something you push for, and that's why I continue to have you on my podcast.
I'm really proud to say we just had received the word. We got the endorsement of Oregon Single Payer Advocates, which is kind of the political arm of Healthcare for All Oregon. You know, we have a really strong movement in Oregon for universal healthcare. There was a poll a couple of years ago, I think it was 2019, showed the majority of Oregonians, even in more what are known as more Republican areas, majority of Oregonians by a wide margin, support a single payer universal model. And this is on the table now.
Yeah, and they're doing stuff that, and I can't get into the technicalities of it all because it's above my head. But I know that they did something to basically allow an exploratory committee to be funded.
That's right.
So they're making steps that are like, we're going to do this. Right. Like, you know, the train is moving.
The train is moving, but like, you know, the insurance companies, big pharma, like, they don't want that train to get to its destination. And so that's why it's very important that Eugene's next representative is a really strong champion for a universal single payer Medicare for all style.
Someone that's actually pushing it instead of just saying, like, it would be nice if we had affordable health care. Like, no, we need to hear strategies, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yes. Now let's get back to you and less about politics. We'll talk about that. We'll get to it. But this is all entrenched, you know, but what do you love most about Eugene? I think we talked about that. I do want to ask a side note about that. You and your husband are both alumni from the U of O, is that correct?
Yes.
Did you do both undergraduate and graduate there? You did?
No.
So you did your graduate back at East, and then that's
what I did my law degree at the University of Oregon. Yeah. My husband did his master's and his PhD at the University of Oregon.
And you had told me at one point that was like kind of your Oregon story, was that he went to school out here and was like, oh my gosh, that's like the happiest. You can explain that.
Yeah. So we met in college in Vermont. He came out to Eugene for a master's program in communications. We were out of touch for a few years, and then he came back to New England. I threw this New Year's Eve party. Long story short, we got together. We got engaged. You know, we started a family, and he was like waking up saying, you know, I dreamt about Eugene again. I dreamt about riding my bike in Eugene. I dreamt about the berries in the Willamette Valley. And, you know, I had lost my mom, my grandma, my aunt.
So maybe there wasn't a lot of reason to be in there. Yeah.
There wasn't a lot like tying there anymore.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he had a dream to come out here and raise our family here and to finish his degree. And so that's why we moved to Eugene. It wasn't a hard sell.
Yeah.
I was ready, and I have just fallen in love with this place. And I'm really proud to be raising my two kids here and to have really strong ties in this community. Now, you know, after many years as a public school parent, active in local politics, I'm co-chair of the Yes for 4J Schools campaign, which we can talk a little bit more about, but really important local measure to support public education in Eugene. And, you know, I work with the local Sierra Club, and
yeah, you're definitely, you know, connected. I mean, this is a conversation that happens a lot, though, because a lot of people move and go to different areas. And I've been critical on this podcast about, I hate to throw it out, I'm just going to say it, but like Shanae Joy Stringer's running for mayor, right? And she was great. She was impressive with what she was talking about. It's not personal, but when people are new to an area, there's criticisms that will be thrown around. I think you've done your time. I think that there's truth to that when someone's been there 2 years, 3 years. Yes, but when you go to school here, and then like even Karin went to school here, she left, did work. I'm not the one to decide. You know, people do need to decide what it means to be an Oregonian or Eugenian or however that works, but it's difficult. It is frustrating when you see people, though, when you've lived here for 30-something years, 40 years, I've been here forever, but when you look at the political world, not very many people have been here 20 years. There's a lot of new people coming in, which is good, fresh voices and whatnot, but yeah, that's an interesting thing about people's different experiences from Eugene, and I know that you're definitely connected. Let's talk about life lessons. What's a valuable lesson that you've learned from your experiences outside of politics? So just if you were talking to somebody that just you need to make sure that you can motivate them quickly, what is your big life lesson? It's a tough one.
I would say, you know, YOLO.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I just...
So you're not Buddhist, is what you're saying.
I mean that.
No. I don't know if Buddhists even believe in reincarnation. Let's not get crazy. No, but
you know, it's like, because I've been through some losses in my life, in my family and in my circle, you know, I know life is short.
Yeah.
And you got to enjoy it. you gotta find your passion. You gotta focus on the things that make you happy and live without regrets.
Yeah.
You know, you'll regret more what you don't do.
I love that quote about like, you're going to regret what you don't do, not what you do. My grandma told me when I lost my mom, and you talked about losing your mom, and we've talked about that off air too, about losing loved ones. And my grandma told me something I love that she said, try not to focus on where they're not and focus on where they are, which is your heart, you know? Mm-hmm. And it sounds cheesy, but, and then also she just said simply live her legacy. Mm-hmm. When you lose someone that you love, it almost gives you a strength, you know, that I just think is that's I'm not who I am today if it's not because of losing the people that I care about. So, yeah, that's a huge thing I can relate with. You talked about passions. So besides your professional work, what are some of your passions? What are you passionate about? I know you like riding a bike with your kids in the trailer or whatever. Is it a Burley?
They're getting too big for
that. Do you have
now.
A Burley?
No, that's a very we don't have a Burley, company. But we have like a Dutch style cargo bike. It's put the kids in the front.
Yeah.
But they don't want to ride.
But just being out and about, I know that's, I see your Facebook and you're definitely bumping elbows every day, even when you're not running for office. So yeah, what are you passionate about?
I mean, I love music. I got my Spotify Wrapped. Last year. And I got like, you know, in the top percent for eclectic. Like I listen to every genre.
That's cool. I listen to a lot of myself. Beyonce's new album. We were talking about this at my work today in the barbershop. And this is so funny. Someone was like, do you guys check out Beyonce's album? I'm like, Beyonce Knowles. You're talking about Beyonce Knowles. I love saying
the
that.
One and only.
That's like a Kevin Nealon joke. Like, you got a minute? Like when he's on an interview, you got a minute? No, but I know you're a Taylor Swift fan. The last time you came on, funny side note, is you sent me this video and I watched it like 3 times. And I'm not a huge Taylor Swift fan. There's been a lot of talk about her on this show among every area of life. But man, she is pretty awesome.
I mean, she defies genre.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
And she's about the music.
She's pretty good. If you could visit, I love to travel. And I can't believe I can afford to travel. The only way I can, I want to talk about it sometime, but it's a lot through using travel credit cards. But you, and this isn't a paid sponsorship, it sounds like it. But you can check out the 10X Travelers Club on Facebook, and they have a lot of advice on how to maximize credit cards. If you have, you know, there's a couple things you have to qualify for, but if you can hit that mark, which I'm not.
We do the Alaska Mile card.
Oh, yeah. It's super smooth, the way to set it up. So, and you know, it takes willpower and it takes a little bit of a decent credit. So you have to, you know, you have to work to get there. And if you're interested, my actual sponsor is Oregon Cashflow Pro. And you can check out his website about money management tips and different things on how to get in the position where you can travel. Anyway, traveling, dream destination. If you could visit any place in the world right now, where would you go and why?
I think Eugene, Oregon is
pretty
cool. Oh,
that's an easy one. Yeah. The grass is damn green in Eugene.
That's right. Well, I think we talked about your trip to Ireland.
Yeah.
You know, I would love to take my kids to Ireland. I am very Irish.
Yeah.
Like 100%.
You've been to Ireland.
I went when I was 18, and it was a big kind of coming of age thing for me to go there and kind of connect with my heritage and my roots and stuff. You know, part of my family's from the north, part was from the south.
Right.
It's kind of part of my family history.
Right.
And
so you went and fought both of them. You're just like headbutting both of them. That's what Irish people know. I don't know. But anyway, go ahead.
And, you know, it's all about, how do you say it? The craic?
I don't know. I'm like super American.
The music, you know, the music, the spirit in the pub, you know, like that's what it's all about.
That's the one thing I didn't do in Ireland a lot because since I don't drink and we travel and we're kind of like 70-year-olds or something. We get up early and we're in the hotel room at like 8 o'clock, you know.
That's a good way to be.
It's a good way. You have to. Not to get sidetracked, but even when I was a drinker, I've been sober 8 years, but I didn't drink when I traveled. Because it's like, what's the point? There's so much cool stuff. I drank out of boredom, but that's a different note. But yeah, Ireland is an amazing place. You know, I'm going to Grand Rapids, Michigan in 2 weeks. I know that you go for work. You go back and forth between California, Washington, D.C. What do you think about D.C.? I'm not talking about the hill, you know, but what do you think when you go to D.C.? Do you enjoy it?
I mean, I do. There's incredible Ethiopian cuisine sure. in DC. And
they're like really the charming service workers in Eugene. I'm just saying, like, Eugene, in DC. I was impressed with, I thought the service was good. Like, people I thought were friendlier than I expected.
Oh, yeah. DC is a great city.
Yeah.
It's a great city, and you have all these incredible museums.
Yeah.
They're all free.
Yeah. Well, we pay quite a bit.
We do, but yeah. you know, it's like yeah. the National
They're
Zoo.
They're 40%.
Take my kids to the National Zoo and Smithsonian. We went to the Air and Space Museum the last time I was there with the family.
Yeah.
Just amazing. We saw the space shuttle.
We went, and she's gonna hate me for telling this story, but we went to DC and my partner, I won't use her name. Maybe you guys could do no anyway. She was kind of having a moment, and it was really a blood sugar moment. Like, we were just hadn't eaten and stuff, and we went to the African American Museum. And the frustrating thing about the museum is the lines. And we're in line, we're basically like, before we even got in the first line, which was gonna be like 2 hour line to get to the Emmett Till thing, which I really wanted to do. And she wasn't up for it. And it's not because of what it was. It's just like, I don't know if I want to stand in line and then go through crying and knowing that it's going to be tragic and hard. I'm just not, and which is totally understandable, you know? And she's going to hate that I'm talking about this. But she had a moment. She was just like, I'm not enjoying this. And I'm like, let's go get chocolate or something that we can do, you know? But it was really powerful going and seeing what we saw anyways. Mm-hmm. But it is, that's the downside about some of the events that are good, like good is the wrong word, but that are like so powerful, like the Holocaust Memorial and different things. The lines can get pretty lengthy, understandably, because they're like life-changing experiences. So DC is really cool, and I'm just glad I got to do that. And some of that's from doing this stupid podcast. I got to be honest, it's gotten me that drive. I'm like, I'm going to DC, and so I hope to go back. Let's talk about mentorship. Are there any mentors or role models who had a significant impact on you? And I really was thinking more outside of politics, but yeah, are there any big role models? You said your mom.
For sure, my mom. She's a very strong person. You know, we survived domestic violence, some real trauma. And, you know, she kind of taught me that resilience. And for that, I am very grateful. Mentorship, I think, in a more formal way, certainly I had some incredible faculty at the U of O law school.
Oh yeah.
I mean, like, just a world-class legal thinkers, particularly on climate and environment. Mary Wood comes to mind.
Sure.
You know, she was kind of the legal genius behind the Giuliani case of the young people suing the federal government for their constitutional right.
Our Children's Peace, is that what it's?
Our Children's Trust,
Our Children's Trust, yeah. People need to Google that. Our Children's Trust.
And, you know, I'd say in politics, I've had many strong influences.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I work for Representative Con Pham. She's a close friend, and I've learned so much from working that's for her in the legislature.
That's a cool way to look at that, too. Somebody that's kind of, I mean, up or whatever, lateral, like up here. Do you know what I'm saying? Realistically, I mean, I know she's that the she's rep. Above the, sure, yes, there's respect. But you know what I mean? Like, you're in that world. And I just think it's cool. And current, too. You know, somebody that you're seeing on a daily basis do the stuff today. Like, today's work. Because today's work is a lot different than 20 years ago.
Oh, for sure.
You know,
the
type of governing. I mean, with technology changing so rapidly and everything, it's wild. And media. You know, what is your first memory about politics that Obama wasn't my first because I was an adult, but I did get to see Obama speak when he came in 2008. And it was life-changing.
I think there's a photo of that in Prince Puckler's.
Yeah, when he came through. Yeah, it was life-changing. I got lucky to get in. It was at MacArthur Court, and I saw him speak. And I was doing music back then, and I did a show at the Black Forest, and they replayed his speech because it was a big deal. Everybody, I mean, he crushed it. And I was watching the speech while I was performing, and I wasn't paying attention to my lyrics, and my friend told me it was, like, the best performance I've ever done because I wasn't paying attention. No, but do you have a memory of, like, the first time or maybe just a memorable time that a politician kind of just, you're like, wait a minute, this is really cool, like, or powerful or profound or inspiring or something like that you remember?
Yeah, I think I told you about, you know, growing up, we were in New Hampshire, very small towns, and that's the first in the nation presidential primary. And so all the presidential candidates come through and shake hands and do town hall events and stuff. And so I went to, I think it was a candidate, it must have been some kind of candidate forum, and it was at the high school gym in the next town. And we saw who would become president, Bill Clinton, speak that night.
Yeah.
I was about 12 years old. This was 1992, I think.
Yeah.
And he gave his Town Called Hope speech.
Right.
And this was a town that had been deindustrialized, very blue collar. People were really hurting.
Yeah.
And that whole high school gym was just captivated.
Sure.
On their feet. Like, it was something.
Yeah. There's some people that just have that. Yeah. You know, obviously Obama. It's like, I mean, yeah. That was right when Obama was hit in 2008, was like right when DVDs burning was an option. And I was doing studio music and stuff, trying, you know. And man, I was like burning DVDs and giving them to people. And I was also listening to Alex Jones at the time, which is fun. That's true. Isn't that weird how things change? Like, because Alex Jones wasn't the same guy. As he is today. He was terrible then too. But like, my point was, YouTube was starting to get big, and you see, like, and it's crazy how politics change and how the way that it's done.
Totally.
And social media. I know that you're huge on social media, and you have to be in today's world to make, you know, that stuff's tough. You know, what legacy do you want to leave behind? Whether it's in politics, activism, advocacy, or just like simply the way you live your life. Obviously you're a mother, and so you have two kids, but like, that's the easy answer. So who, you know, what legacy beyond your children would you like to leave?
Well, you know, I think it's leave a place better than you found it.
Yeah.
That's definitely my
leave no trace. This is very Oregon.
Yeah. And you know, our climate emergency is very serious.
Yeah.
And I've dedicated 20 years of my life to advocacy, community organizing, supporting policy change, litigation. I mean, you name it.
Yeah. If you Google and, you, then there's evidence. Like, cause there's, yeah, you've done a lot.
And, you know, and that's why I got involved in politics, because I know that we won't have the kind of changes we need.
Yeah.
That are going to stabilize our climate and our clean air, clean water, you know, the things that we need to leave behind for our next generation. If we don't have people in positions of decision-making authority who understand this crisis and are willing to take the risk to take action.
Yeah.
No. And that's why I'm running for the seat.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much, I'm not a climate scientist, you know, I'm barely a podcaster, but I will say like that ice storm was pretty alarming, because I think that's like what we're seeing is that we're going to see more extremes.
The tip of the ice storm. Berg.
Yeah. No, yes. That was wild. Mm-hmm. And that, cause I'm telling everybody that, cause like we just talked about how long you've been in Eugene. I've been here for a long time, 40 years. And so when people are like, no, this is normal. It happens. I'm like, no, it does not. That was not normal. You know? And you're like, how do you know that? And be like, because 200 year old trees came down.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was really scary and, but I don't know. The climate's a big issue. And obviously this election is about women. Most of them are. But I mean, obviously a woman's right to choose. And I know that that's almost goes. I don't talk about it a lot of times when I have candidates like yourself, that it's like almost an obvious thing, because it's like everybody knows that that's a no brainer, that you'll be fighting tooth and nail about women's rights and not just women, just, you know, the rights of all people. That's the thing. It's you know, I wish we could, the All Lives Matter people could actually be talking about that now when it's not a counter to that, because it's a great message, but it can't be a counter to only a one person's life. That's the whole point of the message. Anyway, so let's talk a little bit about your seat, the seat that you're running for. Paul Hovey, who's held the seat for 20 years, he recently announced that his decision to retire from the Oregon House after 20 years of service, marking an end of an era for state legislature. His departure comes amidst a backdrop of notable events, including a failed recall attempt initiated by the United Food and Commercial Workers 555, the union representing Oregon grocery workers. Despite facing significant pressure, Representative Hovey overwhelmingly retained his position with 90% of the vote and choosing to keep him in office, just showing how ridiculous the recall was. Would you like to add anything I might have missed about the recall? And how do you perceive Representative Holvey's legacy and the impacts that his tenure in Oregon in politics, particularly in regards to labor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So Representative Holvey served Eugene in the legislature for 20 years, and he's now Speaker Pro Tem. He's the chair of the Committee on Business and Labor, and he chairs the Capital Construction Subcommittee. He's on the Natural Resources Subcommittee that Rep. Pham co-chairs. I mean, I think he's probably been on most of the committees over the course of his career. He has tremendous experience. I mean, he knows inside out kind of how the budgeting process works and some of the really finer, more complex tax regimes that people don't know much about, but really matter and make a difference in our lives and how our state is run or not. And so I have tremendous respect for his whole body of work. You know, he's very well known as a strong champion for workers and for labor unions. A piece of unfinished business for him is really making sure that construction workers who work in private construction can get their claims for wage theft processed in a timely and fair way and get paid, because that's currently not happening in the way that it needs to. And, you know, there are a few other things like that. He has been very outspoken for sustainable agriculture. He was the guy who got field burning banned in the Willamette Valley quite some time ago, 15 years ago. You know, my kids breathe cleaner air because of Paul Holvey. You know, he's always had kind of one foot in labor and one foot in environment. He was kind of like the Green New Dealer before that was a thing, before that was a cool thing. And, you know, and that's very much where I come from. You know, I work in the environmental community. I also work in the labor movement and kind of see how sometimes powerful interests look to divide those two constituencies and how we're much more powerful when we come together and say, no, we can actually like build clean energy with good union jobs that pay family wages and protect people's rights and also help the climate. Like we can do that. And I'm kind of the candidate that can bring those communities together.
I'm not going to ask you to relitigate the recall and all that stuff because it's not something that really involves you. It's what happened before. But I mean, it's recalls. And what we've learned from recalls is that if you live in an area where it's a town that is dominated by one political affiliation, which Eugene would be liberal, then if you recall a candidate or an elected official from that area, it's going to fail, and if you're successful like they were in the city council with Claire Surrett, they're going to replace you with someone probably more progressive because they can. Because then it doesn't go to the voters, it goes to the council that it depends on what seat it is, of course. But it's just Zach Bissett told me something about the school board when he was in Springfield, that they were talking about the superintendent. There was some talk about maybe we, and he's like, what I've learned, if I learned anything from my own short time on the school board, is that if you remove a superintendent, and I know 4J is dealing with this and there's optimism about the new person, but they're like, if you do that, you will go backwards because you have to get them up to speed to where you're at right now before you can actually start progressing from where you're at right now. Mm-hmm. And so that just, you have to think about that, you know, when there's recalls and stuff, and that's not your area. I don't know. I'm just saying this seat, that's what's going to be in the headlines about this recall, about this previous person, and people are like, we want change. Well, I mean, there's a track record that people say Paul Holvey has a, you know, labor positivity track record. And so that's kind of the recall was politics, you know, and that's proven. So it'll be interesting to see. Now, why do you like to run after such distinguished dinosaurs in our community? You ran for Congress in the primary in DeFazio's seat. Now Val Hoyle got the seat, which I'm, you know, she's another person that's very pro labor, and you guys are all awesome. It's hard sometimes, you know, who to vote for. You got my vote, but I know I have people I really admire that they are big supporters of Val Hoyle. Now, but why is it that you like to follow up people that have ran for office that are so amazing? And like Peter DeFazio and Holvey, and it's such a, I think it gives you, I mean, it's a big place to start. So why is that where your goal is? That's just been your MO. So what motivated you to kind of do that? Is there any coincidence, or did it just happen to be the time? I guess the question is that what I wrote down in my notes was, how do you envision stepping into this role and building upon Representative Holvey's legacy while also introducing your own agenda? Or is it time for a completely new legacy?
Mm.
That's what I don't know.
Yeah, I think we are. I mean, you sort of put your finger on, like, we're at a generational change moment.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And there's an inevitability of time marching on, right? Eugene is changing.
Yeah.
Oregon is changing.
Yeah.
The world is changing. Climate is changing. Right. These are reasons why I'm running for this office, is because I believe that I am very much in touch with what working families are going through today.
Yeah.
Kids in public school who went through the pandemic.
Yeah.
Okay. Folks who are dealing with student debt, burdens that that previous generations just didn't have to
sure.
deal with.
Yeah.
Because we used to invest more in education.
That's the funny thing about Make America Great, is that in those times, corporate taxes were like 90% in some areas, you know, and just insanely progressive.
And so I saw this thing on Instagram the other day. It was like, when did everything start to get real great for stockholders and billionaires and kind of go downhill for working people? 1980. 1980 was kind of like the beginning of the great divide in our society in terms of the ultra wealthy and the rest. And, you know, that's the year I was born. So don't blame me. I'm here to try to fix it.
Well, I'm sure when you were a baby, you didn't destroy it. It was actually Ronald Reagan
who destroyed it.
Yes. Well, just with trickle down economics, that I saw a meme one time and it said, it was like, Mom, how do trickle down economics work? And then the mom said, the wealthy people get all of the money.
Right.
And then the kid was like, and then what? And then the mom was like, that's it.
That's it.
That's the whole thing.
That's how it works.
So yeah, that doesn't work. And that's why we're here to fight that.
Yes.
I do commend you on trying to follow in the footsteps of greatness, or whatever people are going to say. DeFazio really is the big, I don't know a ton about Paul Hovey, to be fair. I've been pretty cemented in Springfield, and DeFazio, though, even though my dad, well, I mean, I knew he was doing something right when my dad was like, I can't stand that guy, you know? But I've heard so many personal stories about people that he changed their lives, you know, and surprising ones that things like a criminal that I know that is currently incarcerated, that he was really trying to help keep his spirits up, and just cool stuff. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm. Stuff that's like real. Cause when people commit crimes, they're still a human being, you know, and that's that. Yeah. So, let's talk about endorsements. Mm. I skipped this part. Whatever. We're going to talk about endorsements. You've had a lot of support. Is it Confam? Is how you say mm-hmm. her first name? Okay, cool. Endorsements from figures like Representative Confam, who you said you've been working with and working for, former State Representative Marty Wilde, as well as others, highlight a broad base of support for your candidacy. How important do you believe these endorsements are in shaping public perception? And where is your primary support coming from? Like, what would you consider your base?
Great questions. I have a lot of support from sitting members of the legislature, and that's because I work in the legislature, and I've worked with many members of the caucus and their staff. And, you know, Representative Pham is she's a force. You know, we're always working a bill or working a budget priority or working something and making stuff happen. And, you know, folks know that about me. You know, I'm a hard worker. I'm consistent with my values. And, you know, I collaborate with people to get things done.
Sure.
And that's what this job is. And so, you know, I have a lot of support from folks in the legislature, Representative Pham, of course, Representative Travis Nelson, who's a nurse and a really strong advocate for single-payer health care. Senator Sarah Gelser from Corvallis, really strong voice on education and human services, really fighting hard for kids in foster care, kids with special needs, some of the most marginalized, vulnerable folks in our society. You know, she has been there for decades doing that. And I'm really honored to have her support. Representative Farah Chaichi, really outspoken on the war in Gaza. You know, she was one of the first folks to really take a stand in Oregon politics, and you know, she got some pushback for that.
Yeah.
And you know, I think now that strong moral clarity and just saying, you know, what's happening with over a million people without any access to food, water, medicine, yeah, shelter. I mean, while these convoys of aid trucks are locked out, I mean, it's just,
that's a tough one because, you know, just the Gaza stuff, like for me, I focus on my podcast primarily locally. And so I haven't touched on it because I don't see what I could add to the conversation. I barely know anything about it. Right. I'm not saying we shouldn't discuss it at all. I'm just saying, like, you'd be a better, you were probably a lot more versed. I've kind of just been like, it's so hard for me to pay attention to, because if I do, I'm like, I don't know what to do. And I don't even know how much we as America, like, can we stop what's happening? Even, I mean, there's people that you're like, well, we can do, I don't know without, I don't know. It's just tough. Like, that's not our country.
For sure. And I think, you know, the U.S. and Israel have a longstanding alliance and relationship. So we do have a lot of influence, actually.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the administration has been shifting kind of their position and starting to push back on the Netanyahu administration.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing, but like, we're still bankrolling the weapons.
I've said that, and I don't think, and this is a hot take, these are my words, not yours, but I've said, I don't think that we should be supporting religious regimes, period. Right? With our, and I don't know. I mean, Israel is cool with their funding. They're doing okay. They're probably because of our funding, but I don't really want to go too deep into it. We can, but the thing is that I worry. I'm like, I just feel powerless in that thing, mm-hmm, in that whole situation. And I want to make it, I want to say this too, that like, when it comes to, and you've been great about this, because just because an issue doesn't matter to certain, not that it's not that it doesn't matter to me. I'm just because certain issues matter more to people, right? That doesn't mean that that person is like a bad person. If you don't agree on what's the number one core issue to them, that's what an umbrella is. You know what I'm saying? And so I don't want that to ever, this is such a huge issue. I just don't want it to divide people that are trying to work on things together here.
Totally.
You
definitely
know what I'm saying? And I'm not, anybody speak your mind on this, please, because you should, because it's a travesty what's happening, you know, and call for ceasefire, all that stuff. I stand for the protests. I always support protest. I don't see any reason we should have violent protests in America over this, you know, because it's not going to be productive. But protest all you want. Anyway, let's not get too sidetracked with that.
Well, you know, I think you asked about my endorsements, and, you know, so I have some strong progressives backing me. And also, you know, folks from all walks of life. You know, I have a lot of relationships in Eugene. A lot of people supporting me come from kind of the older generation as well as the younger generations, like the Sunrise Movement, but also Betty Taylor, who's almost 100 years old and was the longest serving city councilor ever in the city of Eugene.
She's not old enough to run for president, but still, like, that's anyway, go ahead.
You know, she's supporting my candidacy. She's kind of the godmother of like the Amazon Creek, you know, and she knows that I'm going to be the strong voice for the environment. And that's important for South Eugene in terms of our next representative. And, you know, I have the support of the Sierra Club. I have the support of some climate groups like Sunrise, and also Lead Locally is another one. As well as the Medicare for All groups, you know, Single Payer Advocates of Oregon, Our Revolution, Progressive Democrats, Progressive Change Campaign Committee. These are all the Medicare for All kind of single payer groups. They're all supporting my candidacy. So I think, you know, I have a lot of support from elected officials and also grassroots organizations and neighborhood leaders.
Yeah.
And that's really what's going to push us over the top in this election.
Yeah. I mean, I live in Springfield, so unfortunately, let's talk real quick about the area that you're going to be working in. Obviously, it's South Eugene, but you can talk about the map a little bit if you can describe
it.
Sure.
So House District 8 is most of South Eugene. You know, it's the campus areas, it's downtown, it's some of the WIT, Jefferson West Side, Friendly Neighborhood, South Eugene, and down to Fox Hollow, and kind of then all the way down into some rural areas outside of Cresswell and Cottage Grove. It goes as far west as Chambers Street. And, you know, it's a really special area. It's my neighborhood. It's where I live, raise my kids, walk my dog, ride my bike. And do a lot of my community work and community organizing. And I'm really proud to be running for this seat to represent Eugene.
It's a pretty cool part of town. I mean, Eugene is such a cool town. It's been a rough 10 years, you know, in Eugene. And I do think I see some optimism. I think we're making some dent in the homelessness situation. I personally feel like campus will be really interesting to see when it reopens, like, fully, because I work on campus, at least now. I'm worried they're going to push us out, because it's gentrification is happening big time, and it's wild. It's happening right in front of our eyes, where we're seeing, you know, I was trying to explain to my dad what gentrification is, and I said, basically, like, it's not about necessarily, it can be about color, it can be about, you know, a lot of different economic standing things, but mostly it's about class. And in my experience, where it's just the people that have grown up and lived in Eugene just now cannot afford to be there
anymore.
That's right. And it's done by a systematic thing. I've been hearing more and more about people buying up city blocks, how corporations are buying our housing. Mm-hmm. And that's, it's right, disgusting. And hedge, you're one of the few, well, people that I know that will actually be like, no, I'm not going to put up with this kind of stuff. You know, there's people in politics, like we talked on the last, on take one, about Elizabeth Warren. And I know that she actually does the work, you know, like Elizabeth Warren, somebody that will fight for consumer protections. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I've watched her do a lot of stuff to actually improve the lives of people, of all, right, everybody,
whether it's student loans, junk fees,
right,
credit card fees. You know, she's on a tear about, H&R Block and TurboTax, yeah, yeah, kind of charging people to, yeah, do their taxes. Now there's a free tax filing thing that people should use,
yeah,
on the IRS website. Like, that's Warren.
Sure.
That's impact.
We're kind of at the, so only hardcore fans are listening, but like, in California, I want to, mm-hmm, talk about this. You had no, mm-hmm, idea I was going to bring this up. The way that the primary went down is not good. They screwed Katie Porter so bad. You know, and in the way that, you know what I'm talking about?
She's, I do.
Katie Porter, she'll be back, and she's amazing. If you don't know who she is, she's a single mom with a whiteboard, with a dry erase pen.
Yeah.
And she is tough as nails, and she is the right kind of person to have in politics, because she is literally the average person in every way, in a great way, you know, and that's a compliment. And I see that a lot in you, and I have, you know, where it's just like, this is, you know, I don't know. Anyway, you know, we talked about union rights, labor, environmental sustainability, government accountability, I think this is like paramount to what this election is about. Those are your core issues. And you can find out on your website at canning4oregon.com more about that. Please, people, go to Doyle Canning's website and donate and all that good stuff. Can you elaborate on your plans to address these issues and enact meaningful change, particularly within the context of Oregon's political landscape and the priorities of your constituents? ChatGPT wrote that question, as you can tell.
ChatGPT is writing a lot of things these days. And, you know, some of that is saving work for people. Some of it is also kind of...
It's getting cloudy. But
yeah, in terms of journalism and other fields... the law profession, you know, there's a lot of writing is the job.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I could tell, like, this isn't your voice.
No,
this is the robot voice.
I wanted to not sound like an idiot. I used the robot. I've been doing a little bit of that, and I do use it as a tool.
I use it.
Of the stuff that they came up with is great, and I reworded and different things, but man, like, that does make sense. Can you elaborate on your plans to address these issues and enact meaningful change?
Yes, robot.
Particularly with the context of Oregon's political landscape and the priorities of your constituents. I actually liked that. That's why I left it. Now I changed stuff. Look at that part says though, T-H-O. So I added that. Anyway, right.
Are you human? Check the boxes.
Sure. Not yet. That's what AI is going to tell us. Anyway, the question is, like, what are you going to do? What is day one? I know that you, mm-hmm, aren't going to say that you're going to be a dictator on day one. Like, on day one, what would be your number one priority?
I think making sure that I am well prepared with a strong agenda for Eugene.
Yeah.
And really versed in what we need to be advocating for in terms of housing.
Yeah.
You know, we got I think it was $6 million in this short session for Eugene to make some infrastructure improvements so that more housing can be built. Well, that's great. $6 million is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
That's... Okay. So we're going to need more.
Yeah.
And I want to be ready to, you know, come in high and get what we need.
Yeah.
And really be clear on like where those direct investments are needed and be a strong champion for that. Because housing is the number one issue facing our town.
Yeah.
Like you said, people, longtime residents can't afford to stay. New families can't afford to put down roots. Yeah. We got people living out on the street with nowhere to go if it's over, was it 36 degrees? And even then, it's like just for the night, you know. Yeah. And this isn't a tenable situation. And no. Eugene is a very welcoming and progressive community. But if we can't solve our housing crisis, you know, it leads to division.
Yeah.
Well, you and went to, you I went, see that, you know, that's happening.
You went to U of O, and it's always made me laugh how the these are both great schools, University of Oregon State, both great. Why is U of O looked at as being the liberal school? Because Oregon State is doing all of the research into agricultural development and how to be a hipster.
Climate and forestry.
Yeah. And forestry and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Where the University of Oregon is doing sports business, which, I mean, is great. You know, it's like their main focus. I knew a person that published theories where there's water on Mars. There's a great geophysics department. There's great sciences. Wow. You know, yeah, she's an ex-girlfriend. It was super weird because she was, yeah, anyway. She published theories there was water on Mars. It's, in yeah. But there's crazy stuff happening at University of Oregon, but I just always, it's so corporate, and I work on campus, and I can tell you that the university has had zero concern whatsoever of some of the most established minority-owned businesses in the history of Eugene existed on campus. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have Espresso Roma, which is being pushed out, and I know that now, and you had Cafe Siena, and you had oh my gosh. The one with the Euros. It's already gone. It's already gone. It's been closed for like a year, you know, that was open super late, like 3 o'clock in the morning. And they were some of the best employers on campus, and it was minority owned. They're Middle Eastern, you know? And so, I mean, gosh, it's just so frustrating. They don't care. And they're going to push it out. Then the businesses that are going to be put in, because our barbershop was torn down on campus. So that had been there for 99 years. We lost our lease and it was torn down. And, you know, George is Native American. So he's half Irish, half Native American. And so another minority owned business. I hate to, you know, he looks blonde hair and stuff, but he is Native American. Mm-hmm. Like he's a Chinook Indian, you know? And so his business was... Not they're just like, sorry, they were really good to us, to be fair. They told us it was coming and all this stuff, and like we bounced back, we were around the corner. My point is that like the university does not care about who they do uproot and the different things. And I worry about that so much, that how much power they have, that gentrification is happening so much. And we, you know, not be replacement theory because it's not going to be racist, but it's San Francisco's who's replacing us.
So I mean, they're definitely was a dynamic during the pandemic that people called the Zoom town. And it really hit Bend. You know, you had a lot of people who moved to Bend during the pandemic and had like a California or Seattle salary, but could work remotely in Oregon and love the lifestyle. You know, they want to ski, they want to hike, they want a mountain bike, whatever. The average home price in Bend now is $800,000.
That's so crazy. I mean, I don't want to talk about just exactly my own home, but I was lucky enough to buy a home in Springfield. And it has gone up by 40% since I bought it in 2018. That is unlucky that I was, but I missed the 2008. I'm old, guys. I've missed every single opportunity to be in a position to be a homeowner. I finally got lucky.
Elder millennials,
that everything
man.
Fell up. Yeah, because I'm 42. You know, I'm not like a kid. So it's like sometimes I feel guilty being a homeowner because I know how much people are struggling. You know, and it's just tough. But I don't know. There's not even questions in there, but that's cool. It's just there's a lot of frustrations for the direction I see Eugene. And so that's why I think that somebody like yourself is a good person to have in there. And why I supported you when you ran for Congress, because, you know, what do you say to the people? And I want to hear your battle cry here. Not like you're, you know, jump do it. But like, what do you say to the people? It's like, it's not your time. It's not your time. Like, you've heard that a lot. I know. And I hate even asking this question, and I don't like the face you're giving me. because you're mad. No, but it is progressives time. It's not about, it wasn't, what's, I got the sticker on my thing about Bernie. It's not about him. It's about us. It's about everybody. It's always been about all of us.
That's right.
And so it's our time, you know?
That's right. And I think, you know, I'm ready for this job.
Yeah.
On day one.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I think you asked me earlier what people may not know about me. I'm 44 years old.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm someone who's come of age through the financial crisis of 2008, student loans, you know, trying to get a foothold as a young family in Eugene. Like, the cost of childcare was more than law school.
Yeah.
These are things that we're dealing with today now. And, you know, that's the perspective that we need in Salem.
Yeah.
You know, there's kind of a structure in Oregon politics, as there are in other states, where you have what's called a citizen legislature. So it's a part-time job, it's very low paying, and it's kind of set up from agricultural days of, like, you'd have people who ran their farms and then they'd, like, come do the legislature for a couple months.
Yeah, which is
in the off season. And so I love that vision and that idea, you know, that we have a legislature made up of regular people.
That's what it's supposed to be.
That's what it's supposed to be.
And when people are so mad about the government, it's supposed to be local government is literally us.
Right. But, like, what we have now is because it's so low paying and it's part time. And it's a really tough job. You know, you don't have a lot of young working people running for these offices.
Yeah. Well, that's what Shanae Joy Stringer was saying, running for mayor. She's a renter. She's talking about, you know, she'd like to buy a home and all that. We talked about that, and that's awesome. You know, people, and like Kevin Cronin, who is now a homeowner, but he does a lot of work for advocacy for renters, which I joke with him. I'm like, I don't know why you still care about them. You're beyond that. No, but I'm just joking. That's terrible. He's so dedicated to it because he'll never forget where he came from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I mean, you know, there's just so much of that. My girlfriend's dad is the CEO of a big company in Iowa called, it's like Women's Health or something. And he went through his MBA at the University of Oregon, and he always talks about how he's like super liberal because he's like, I still support social services and safety nets. And mm-hmm. It's all about safety nets. It's all about having, if you slip up, because you're going to, we want to make sure that it doesn't destroy you. We want to make sure you don't lose your house because you broke your hand.
That's,
you know?
Right. That's right.
You know, and I just think it's not that hard. And these are things that, like, with healthcare that I know they were so popular in 2016 with conservative people right now that would probably be supporting Robert Kennedy, right? There's a lot of different reasons people are jumping ship from Biden and Trump. But there's a lot of free agents in that, where there's the Robert Kennedy or there's been different people that have popped up. Even Bernie is kind of that. I'm not saying that they're the same, because they're definitely not. Bernie is actually an authentic person and Robert Kennedy is a nut job. But that being said, those voters are the same people that are willing to be gravitational to candidates that are off the cuff, or like maybe don't fit in party politics. Would it be, this is a tough question, and I don't know, I didn't tell you I was going to ask. Would it be fair to say that you've had to deal with competing against your own party sometimes, to where, yes, it's primary season, and that's what primaries are, and that's the beauty of it. We're supposed to exchange mm-hmm. ideas. I know you totally love it to bump elbows with people that you may disagree with, at least in your own party. And beyond that, I know you're capable, but would you think it's fair to say that you've had to deal with a lot of pushback from your own party at times?
I think that's fair to say.
Which I think is a good thing in a sense, because if you're locked,
well, I think it shows that I am willing to challenge even members of my own party.
Yeah.
When I feel like Oregonians' well-being is at stake.
With conviction. Yeah. Like, meaning it hasn't, your message has not changed. I mean, that's fair. You know, that I've talked to you over the last 5 years about these interviews, and we could literally have asked the same questions and it would stay the same. It has evolved because, you know, you've taken some lumps and then bounced back up, and then you've been even when it's not campaign time, and there's, you know, you've been a present voice, and so that's good. Looking ahead, what broader goals do you have to achieve through your potential tenure in that Oregon House?
Broader goals. Well, you know, Representative Pham championed what's called HB 2021, Oregon's clean energy standard, and it kind of set the plan and the direction for transition to clean energy. Most ambitious clean energy standard in the country. Really awesome. And also every day we have agencies come in and say, like, here are the ways we're coming up short. We're not hitting the targets. We're not on track to hit those timelines. And I want to make sure we do. And that means removing barriers and supporting our agencies, like the Department of Environmental Quality, the Department of Energy, ODF, you know, all the agencies that manage our energy, natural resources, to like get it done. And that may not sound visionary, but, you know, that's what I've learned from working in the building.
Yeah.
Is like, that's what really matters.
Yeah.
And we can have a lot of, you know, visionary conversations about, you know, solutions to climate change. And I have a whole TED talk about that.
Sure.
But like day to day, it's about like rolling up your sleeves and like getting it done. And that's really who I will be for Eugene and kind of how my journey as a politician has changed.
Yeah. Salem is you spent a lot of time now working in Salem. My mom worked for the state. And I used to swim in that fountain out front, which it's funny. I went recently.
It's all under construction now.
I'm sure it's all different, but it's wild because I was like, that's not that close. Like, she used to leave me in there and go inside. But
those were the days, yeah. The latchkey kids.
That's offensive, first of all. Like, I'm just kidding. Nobody is going to steal me, though. Like, I was this like pasty little, I looked like a light bulb. I just looked like a light bulb with red hair. All right, what do you want to tell the voters? You know, the election's May 21st, which I think is a terrible day for them to choose. It must be a Tuesday, but that is the end. That will be 1998. May 21st is the Thurston shooting.
Mm.
And then, so that I'll never forget. There's only a few days that I remember. I don't know if I know multiple people's birthdays, but I do know a couple. But yeah, that day is always going to be something I think about. That's a tough one, but... And that is election day, so it's easy to remember. We in Oregon don't have to wait till that day.
We do not.
Can drop it in the box as soon as you get it.
The better.
Yeah, and I'm hopefully in November you'll be busy, but you know we can.
There is no Republican candidate.
I know. No. The election is in May. The election is May 21st. I want to drill that home. What I was going to say is last time.
And if you want to vote in this election, you must be a registered Democrat.
Okay.
Check your registration.
That's going to frustrate a lot of people. And this is the way that things work. No Republican stepped up to run. And so if you're a Republican, you won't be voting for anyone because this is a primary. People forget how this works because Trump can't debate. You know, essentially, that's a big part
of it.
He's
not in the voters pamphlet either, apparently.
No?
No.
And that's on his own accord. You pay money to do it.
Yeah.
And he didn't sell enough Bibles. Or whatever. It's so crazy that you can just make up the way that things work. You do have to pay to be in it. You know, at one point they weren't even going to do one, though, voters pamphlet in Oregon. I think they skipped the midterm, which is gross. You know, that there was a time that they skipped one and that you could get it online or whatever. Anyway.
There is a voters pamphlet for city election and this election.
Well, Doyle Canning.
So definitely read it.
CanningForOregon.com. Please go there, donate, whatever you'd like to do. If you're listening to the podcast and you've enjoyed it, please go to my website, which is strpod.com, strpod.com. And you can donate. You could buy a shirt, do whatever. There's different ways to donate. You could be a monthly or one-time donor. I'm trying to, you know, raise some money so that I can do some more advertising to get the word out. I pretty much hit the wall on how much I can get this to reach people. It like has a certain, they shadow ban you. I don't know if I can say that. But anyway, Doyle Canning, thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to end this with a song. This is a throwback. This is me, Patty Rose, featuring Rio. This is Come Back to the Northwest.
We can simply enjoy the sound of a unified collective with a focus on humanity. Our soul's only objective is lose and maintain sanity. Come back to the Northwest, 'cause I haven't left yet. Come back to the Northwest, 'cause I haven't left yet.
Eugene, I love you and I'll place no place above you. I escape the hate that some people have and with it from too many people don't see how great this city is. The music that we make.
matters and it drives them appreciated spirit. That's the sound of change, music that comes from the brain. Use it to work through the pain. This music's why we used to reign.
We can simply enjoy the sound of a unified collective with a focus on humanity. Our soul's only objective is lose and maintain sanity. Come back to the Northwest, 'cause I haven't left yet. Come back to the Northwest, 'cause I haven't left yet. Poverty or patience, reluctance to join anything representing the commercialistic coin. Struggle for our freedoms like bicycling naked. Any chance for a positive reload, we take it. Not guns, hugs, more nugs, and smoke. Probably why I'm always broke. Without ammunition, thus condition can turn on itself. A steam boat wheelie in a tree with a chain and sympathy to stay until we all fall.